This is Diane Horn, your host on the sustainability segment of Mind Over Matters on KEXP Seattle 90.3 FM and on the web at kexp.org. My guest this morning is Bruce Herbert, Chief Executive of Newground Social Investment, a social purpose corporation dedicated to socially responsible investing and shareholder advocacy. Bruce was most recently a guest on the sustainability segment in June of 2013 and told us about recent successes of shareholder advocacy in creating positive change in publicly traded corporations. Bruce Herbert is here today to give us an update on progress made since then and to evaluate accomplishments of shareholder advocacy in this year's 2014 proxy season. Welcome, Bruce.
Thank you. It's great to be here again. It's been a number of years, and I want to give a quick shout out to my friend and former colleague, Larry Doors, who sat right here, and we did this show together for more than 10 years. And Larry has moved on to do more incredible work in the human rights arena, which we really celebrate.
What is socially responsible investing?
Well, socially responsible investing, Diane, is really a way for people to take their values and express them in an arena that they often have thought it was impossible. And that's using their finances and their investment dollars. It has often been described as a three-legged stool, and a stool that has three legs, one of which is screening, and that is taking companies out of your portfolio who are engaged in activities that you don't really agree with or want to be benefiting from. And that's the largest and historically the oldest part of social investment. The second leg is community investment or microcredit lending, and that is what Muhammad Yunus won the Nobel Peace Prize for in 2006, and that is really bringing necessary banking services and capital access to groups of people or regions of the world that have traditionally been underserved, if not outright excluded. And the third leg that we're talking about more today is the shareholder engagement or shareholder activism. And in contrast to screening, which is selling your shares and going to do something else, if you think about it, companies would like nothing more than if everyone who disagreed with their practices sold their shares and never darkened the doorway again. Well, the shareholder activist uses their shareholdings, their rights as shareholders, to actually dialogue with management in hopes of transforming the behavior or activity that could be improved. And what's interesting is over time, we have found that almost always, there's direct alignment between long-term sustainability and justice issues and so forth with long-term profitability.
How widespread is socially responsible investing and who is involved?
Well, it's very widespread. The trends report is done every 2 years by the U.S. Social Investment Forum. And the last one was done in 2012. And unfortunately, the 2014 hasn't quite yet been released, so we don't have the most up-to-date numbers. But at last counting, and it has only grown since then, about $3.7 trillion were invested with some form of one of these three elements involved. And put into context, that makes it roughly about one in every eight or one in every nine investment dollars. And the groups that are involved in these sorts of things include pension funds, labor funds, asset managers, foundations, faith-based filers, and individuals. And the topics of shareholder proposals are really quite diverse. Many concern how companies are governed and how boards are elected or executives paid and their relative openness to shareholders. And for proponents, the shareholders themselves, the process is really democracy in action. It's the hope for accountability at last for corporate boards. Many other types of proposals seek to influence a company's policies on the environment or toward its workers, you know, its place in society or its role in the U.S. political system. And a wave of activists from religious orders to unions to single-issue campaigns are also explicitly using shareholder rights and proposals to further their social and political goals by changing corporate behavior.
Would you say a bit more about the role that shareholder advocacy plays in socially responsible investing?
Well, you know, people are very familiar with an environmental axiom, reduce, reuse, recycle. And most people maybe initially think of those three choices as being equivalent. You know, one is as good as the other. But really, they aren't equivalent. They form more of a hierarchy where recycling is the point of entry. It's necessary, but it's not sufficient to reach our long-term goals. Reducing and reusing have much more beneficial impacts on the ground. And in similar way, the three elements of social investment, the screening, the community investment, or microcredit lending, and the shareholder engagement, they also form a hierarchy where screening is the point of entry. It's the launching point to awareness and activism in terms of one's use of money. But the microcredit lending and the shareholder engagement really have the opportunity to transform the actions and activities on the ground. So really are much more transformative and beneficial.
What determines whether a shareholder proposal is placed on the ballot at an annual meeting?
Well, the rules are really quite simple. They're promulgated by the Securities and Exchange Commission, and a shareholder has to own $2,000 worth of stock, and that's dollars, not shares, and they have to have held it for a period of a year by the time of the filing deadline. Of course, there are a lot of rules around the whole thing, but those are the main criteria. The proposal itself has a 500-word limitation. Now, companies will often challenge proposals regardless of who they're put in by, whether an institutional investor or a very experienced proponent like Newground is, or whether an individual. And so while logistically, I draw a distinction between the logistical ease of filing a proposal, the $2,000 held for a year, versus the actual on-the-ground fact of it, because the companies will challenge that the SEC, you know, use their lawyers and send a legal dossier that's about 3/4 of an inch thick. And unless a person has kind of the knowledge or access to resources to deal with that, they can kind of be washed out of the game. So that's where it's good to act collectively with organizations that are set up to do this kind of thing.
How active has this year's proxy season been in terms of shareholder proposals being submitted?
Well, we're seeing a record number of filings of environmental and socially oriented proposals, really in excess of 430 this year. And average support for them so far is also up by about a percentage point from a year ago. 21.5% last year was the average support. So far this year, 22.4%. We still have a few meetings yet to go. Not every company is on the same cycle and has had their annual meeting yet. We have several of our own that are coming up in coming months. Political spending continues to be the really hot topic. More than a third of proposals really were filed in that arena. Climate change also is heating up, pun intended. Sustainability reporting is high on the list, and human rights are also very popular topics during the season. You know, related to the climate change, the concerned investors who are thinking about the problem of stranded assets have really filed a lot of shareholder proposals, a threefold increase from last year, actually. And leading the way in this arena is the organization ICCR, the Interface Center on Corporate Responsibility. And they are the folks who literally created the South African divestiture movement 45, 46 years ago. And in light of the increasingly dire climate change data and the impacts of global warming, the ICCR members filed 70 climate change-related resolutions this year, 39 more than last year, because the time is now. And as a result, 12 companies so far in a range of industries have already committed to setting public targets for reducing carbon emissions. Now, as well, a number of environmental and social resolutions are filed. That's also reached an all-time high. And as I mentioned, the political issues really take top marks for the third year in a row with the largest number of filings.
I'm Diane Horn, and my guest is Bruce Herbert, Chief Executive of Newground Social Investment. Our topic is shareholder advocacy and progress made toward creating positive change in publicly traded corporations during the 2014 proxy season. And you are tuned to the sustainability segment of Mind Over Matters on listener-powered KEXP 90.3 FM and on the web at kexp.org. Well, you've been alluding to this, but would you give some highlights of the 2014 proxy season?
Well, there's a lot to talk about, as there always is. There were some majority votes. We'll maybe get to that a little bit more later. We had a shareholder proposal ourselves at Chevron that was part of several proposals that were getting at a certain issue from a variety of different perspectives. And our proposal, it was a governance proposal that asked a company for a 10% threshold for shareholders to be able to call a special meeting, not just wait for the once-a-year annual meeting that's all orchestrated by the company. And the rationale for this was because the company has a very poor record of handling environmental issues, and in particular, the degradation of the Ecuadorian rainforest, which led to a $9 billion judgment. This has been in the court proceeding for years. And there was an $18 billion judgment that got reduced to $9 billion, but that has now been passed by the Ecuadorian Supreme Court, which gives it legitimacy in every statute in the land. And so Chevron assets can be seized in any country in which they do business. And the company has said that they were going to fight this until hell freezes over, and then they're going to fight on the ice. And this attitude has led to the problems exacerbating and growing and building. And this is why we think that shareholders need the right to call special meetings to have more dialogue about what really is going on and not going on appropriately at this company. ExxonMobil received a number of shareholder proposals. One was from Natasha Lamb, Arjuna Capital, and she is a graduate of Bainbridge Graduate Institute, the first sustainability MBA program right out here in Seattle. And that asked the company to look at setting a price on carbon for its projects. And the company challenged it at the Securities and Exchange Commission, as I alluded to earlier, is a common practice these days. And they won. Not the company won, Arjuna Capital won, Tasha won. And so the company then, rather than have it go to shareholders for a vote, actually elected to embrace what they were asking for and have produced reports and put in any capital project that they're undertaking, they are calibrating what the carbon impacts of that are and putting a price on it so that they're counting the cost of carbon as if a carbon tax will someday be reality into the cost of their financial projections and modeling. So that's very interesting. Other highlights involved Say on Pay. Now, Say on Pay is a mandatory vote that takes place every year that gives shareholders the option to opine on the pay package. It's not binding necessarily, but companies take it seriously. And right here locally, Expeditors International, their CEO has a relatively low salary, Peter Rose, and relatively low stock options. But the bonus every year would be 5 to 10 times what the annual salary was. And shareholders felt it was just quite out of line. And so in a majority vote, they voted against this pay package. And Peter Rose, who was the founder of the company and was served as the chairman and the chief executive, resigned. And so that's kind of very topical and in the news right now.
How has corporate governance been addressed in this year's proxy season?
Well, corporate governance, we talk about three broad categories, ESG, environmental, social, and governance proposals. And governance has always been like the largest number because it's not just the concerned or sustainability-oriented or activist shareholder that does those, but institutional shareholders of all stripes have always been concerned about how well companies are run. But that said, there have been some new things. The Say on Pay is something that was brought in under the Dodd-Frank Act and required since the downturn. And this seems to be a turning point in that. Shareholders have become very concerned about that, and that's a solid, clear governance issue, and as alluded to with Expeditors International, but there are other companies as well. One company, smaller ones you wouldn't have heard of probably, has delayed their annual meeting for 3 months. Highly unusual. I mean, in fact, 31 years I've been doing this, I've never seen it done, but it can be done and has been done. And the supposition is because they're in dialogue, heated, contentious debate of more like, about the CEO and pay package. But vote counting is something that has risen to the fore and received a large number of shareholder proposals this year. And that's something that actually, you know, we have been the champion of nationally. And what do I mean by vote counting? In corporate America, the choice of what vote formula is used is up to the company according to what state they are chartered in. Some states mandate a certain formula. New York State does, a very fair and even formula, the for votes and the against votes. Other companies can basically throw all manner of votes, even shareholders who haven't voted, into the formula in a way that drastically skews the outcomes. We had a proposal that the company reported only getting a 6% vote, that in actual fact, because they counted votes that hadn't voted, in actual fact, if you count just the for and against votes, got a 56.2%. It was the largest shareholder proposal of any type in that year. And so this has not been well known or well documented, but CalPERS has taken this up. GMI Ratings did a research study of over 1,000 companies in the S&P 500 and the Russell 1000 and found that more than half of companies have some form, now my word is manipulated, voting formula, voting calculus. And so we have taken this to a number of companies, but a lot of resistance. But we started to see the trickle of companies adopting these changed policies because they don't want to have the conversation. They don't want to have to justify what is fair and appropriate about taking every abstaining voter, for instance, who you can't know what their intention is, and say and counting them all just as if they voted for management. And it's always benefits management, you might add. So that's an issue that has been growing a lot and seeing attention that we're particularly interested in because we actually helped to champion it.
Would you comment on efforts this year to push back shareholder advocacy efforts by corporations and groups that support them?
Well, every so often, corporate groups rise up and try to push back on shareholder rights. And this year is one of those years. And they've been doing so in quite a broadly concerted effort. The Manhattan Institute and Commissioner Dan Gallagher, a very conservative commissioner on the SEC, the U.S. Chamber of Commerce, these groups have all been working together. Commissioner Gallagher gave kind of a keynote speech where he just assailed shareholders. And then Leo Strine, the Chief Justice of Delaware, where most big U.S. companies are registered, you know, says that shareholder democracy creates a situation where managers are repeatedly distracted by a variety of topics proposed by investors with trifling stakes. That's a quote from him. And the Chamber of Commerce has launched a campaign to try and turn back what they see as a tide of shareholder activism. And of course, they're concerned about it because we're being successful. And we're being successful because companies are seeing that there is a win-win outcome, a better way forward. But in conjunction with the Center for Competitive Politics, a report was just issued this month called Silencing Business: How Activists Are Trying to Hijack the Public Policy Debate. So the main calls are for significantly increasing the shareholding requirement, significantly increasing the threshold, the percentage vote that has to be achieved before you can automatically resubmit the proposal for consideration. And it's really distasteful, and it's unfortunate because shareholders have brought wonderful issues to the fore that have improved society, have improved the operations of companies, and so forth over the time. And this happens from time to time. You know, I think we'll prevail.
You are tuned to the sustainability segment of Mind Over Matters on KEXP Seattle 90.3 FM and on the web at kexp.org. I'm Diane Horn, and my guest is Bruce Herbert, Chief Executive of Newground Social Investment. Our topic is shareholder advocacy and progress made toward creating positive change in publicly traded corporations during the 2014 proxy season. What shareholder proposals have been put forward in regard to tax avoidance by corporations, and how did they fare?
This is an interesting new wrinkle this year. It's the first year that something related to taxes in this direct fashion has put forward. And a coalition of shareholders led by Domini Social Investments and Newground and Investor Voice were a large part. We had five shareholders who took part in the coalition out of, I think, eight. And we went to Google, and because the reports are that they and companies as a whole offshore their profits. So profits might be made in America, but through a shell game, they are reported from an accounting perspective as having occurred elsewhere so that they avoid U.S. taxes. So a proposal was put on the ballot just asking simply, wasn't saying to do one thing or to do another, but simply asking for a report on its assessment on its tax policies and its assessment of this efficacy, because the social license to operate is always present with any company, but in particular a consumer-facing company the way that Google is. And so it was just asking for a report of their assessment of if there was risk associated with this. Of course, the company fought back on that quite vigorously, but it did go to a vote. Now here, it's important to know that a large number of Google shares are owned by their founding executives and insiders. Actually, they own 525,781,283 shares. So if you remove those shares that you know are going to be voted against and think of the other shares as being more or less independent and open for reasonable consideration, the proposal received about a 4% for vote, but a 21% abstain vote. Now, an abstention is someone who has taken the time to vote. So they're not somebody who just, you know, recycled the proxy, didn't read it. They read the proposal. They read management's strenuous opposition to the proposal and their outright recommendation to vote against it. And yet they were not swayed. So it can be said quite honestly and accurately that roughly 20 to 25% of shareholders did not agree with management on its handling of this topic. So that opens an interesting door. Now, of course, the proposal received a lot of press. Now, you would expect the Wall Street Journal and a variety of publications like that to just sort of say it's ridiculous and any shareholder would be foolish to vote for something that called into question of tax avoidance, because that's more money in your pocket if you don't pay tax. But there's a bigger picture. And here's where the long-term view comes in, is that we simply shouldn't allow companies that use American roads and that benefit from America's education system and the large consumer markets and legal systems to take a free ride, really, at the expense of the rest of us. They are operating on a platform that was created by American citizens, and it's the best platform for business in the world, and yet they want to take all the benefits of that but not pay anything for it. The Citizens for Tax Justice and U.S. PIRG Education Fund released a report just June 5th that found that over 70% of Fortune 500 companies maintain subsidiaries in offshore havens. Collectively, these companies report booking nearly $2 trillion in offshore tax havens. And every year it costs $90 billion in lost revenue to the U.S. tax revenue system. Now, a couple of the companies that are kind of leaders of the pack are Northwest Nike, reported having $6.7 billion booked offshore, and which it otherwise would have owed $2.2 billion in U.S. taxes. $2.2 billion goes a long way in terms of public benefit, you know, new roads, infrastructure, education, and the like. Pfizer, the world's largest drug maker, operates 128 subsidiaries in tax havens. I mean, this is an absolute constructed game, and currently books $69 billion in profits offshore. And that's only the third largest in the Fortune 500. Citigroup, one of the big central banks, operates 427 tax havens in 2008, but disclosed only 21 in 2013. Something is amiss there. They certainly haven't gotten cleaner. They've just got more secretive. And more than double the amount of cash that it reported holding offshore. So while they reported lowering the number of offshore subsidiaries, they actually doubled the amount of cash flowing through those subsidiaries. And they currently pay an 8.3% tax rate. That's a lower rate than a citizen that earns $15,000. They pay a higher tax rate than Citicorp is paying. It's ludicrous on its face, and it's all about the big picture and the common good, not just what one individual can do alone. And it calls to mind that classic quote that if you want to go fast, travel alone. If you want to go far, travel together. And we really are talking about traveling together in this society, in this economy, in this world that is increasingly becoming small.
How can individuals who own individual stocks or mutual funds best address climate change through their investments? Is it better to divest from fossil fuel stocks or own fossil fuel stocks and vote their proxies?
This is a very robust debate right now. Of course, there's the 350.org divestment movement, which is focusing particularly on colleges and universities. And the question is really whether to, going back to the three-leg stool, whether to sell your shares and walk away, or whether to engage and try to transform company behavior. And there are legitimate realities and arguments on both sides. And I'll go into a little more, but in most simple terms, if a shareholder is not going to be engaged and use their shares in an activist way, then it might be best for them to divest as an individual shareholder. However, if they are going to engage, that can really be the game changer and try to shift things. But a word about the divestment movement itself. Stanford, you know, last month announced that they were divesting of coal. They got pilloried in the press and also celebrated by other camps. And that was a good environmental decision, but it also was a very straightforward financial one because the coal index is down 20%. You know, as the markets have been going up over the last 4 years, the coal index is down, and with the carbon tax caps possibly on the horizon, a variety of other things, it's very likely that coal will not be a good investment. But the divestment movement, we go back to the South African divestiture campaign, and a lot of people will say, oh, divesting doesn't change anything on the ground. Well, it's true that it's not a direct correlation, but it's nevertheless an essential step because the divestment movement created the awareness and the attention to the issues on the ground in apartheid South Africa that then led to a number of institutions, probably many of whom were also ones who divested, then engaging in selective purchasing. And that's actually using your dollars to say to companies, if you're doing business in South Africa, we don't want to do business with you. And so as companies lost contracts, they basically had to decide whether the value of South African operations were more worthwhile to them than their U.S. operations or not. And then companies would pull out. And that took money away from the apartheid regime. And that then led to crippling their activities and brought them to the table. And we had the result of Nelson Mandela being freed and now a free South Africa. So divestment is a powerful tool, but we have to understand why it's powerful and not mistakenly say that it's because we're trying to drive stock prices down and so forth. Because if every university divested tomorrow, all in one day, they only own about 2 or 3% of the stocks at most, it would not have an impact on the stock price. But there is a middle path that many organizations are following, even very principled ones that have a mission that would otherwise perhaps encourage them to divest fully. And that is to divest of the majority of holdings, but maintain what we call an advocacy position. A number of shares, again, SEC rules, it only needs to be $2,000 worth, but a large enough position, albeit a small position, that still allows their voice to be heard in corporate America. And this is a middle path that a lot of groups have embraced over the years historically, and many are doing today. And that way you can have a public statement about divestment, but still maintain activism. And bringing these proposals forward, some say that, for instance, well, this is different because you're not just talking about ceasing operations in South Africa, you're asking an oil company to get out of its business. Well, in fact, we are asking them to get out of their business. I mean, campaign ExxonMobil, which has been going on for close to a decade now, I think, is asking the company to reorient itself towards renewables and do so in a way that's timely, not pushed by legislation or outside pressure or loss of social license or what have you, but do it in a way that's constructive and beneficial and not harmful to shareholders or the environment as a whole. So we are asking companies to undertake radical change, but thoughtful radical change that's in their own best interest as well as ours over the long haul. So it's a robust debate, and some people are polemic on one side or the other. And I think there's a really vibrant middle ground, and none of us has a crystal ball. And so I think we need all of these perspectives and all these different actions, you know, together to really move the ball forward.
Do you have any special words about mutual funds?
Well, mutual funds are a way of owning shares. And so there are mutual funds that are starting to offer fossil fuel free portfolios. And of course, the definition of fossil fuel free varies. There's the Filthy 15, there's the Carbon Tracker 200, which used to be 200, now it's more or less 250, and so forth. So, you know, what is fossil fuel? And then there are companies that are utilizing petroleum for transportation, and then there are many other uses of petroleum. I mean, petroleum is in virtually everything that we see and touch and use. So it would be difficult, even if one had a magic wand, to just sort of turn off the petroleum spigot tomorrow. It would have such a profound impact on our society. And I think we need to recognize that and distinguish between companies that are using it in one way versus another, one, and then think about how thoughtful we have to be about this transition. But mutual funds are a way of owning. So the shareholder who owns a mutual fund share doesn't directly own those stocks. Now, they can advocate with the mutual fund company to take certain positions. They can invest in a fund that is avowedly SRI-oriented, socially responsible investment, that has these principles already built in and involved. And that way, you know that the companies are being engaged by the mutual fund manager, even if you don't have the right as a shareholder of the mutual fund to go and do that yourself.
Well, what's the message you'd like to leave our listeners with?
Well, there's great possibility in these activities. And many people, unfortunately, think that we have to divorce our financial lives from the rest of our lives, and we simply do not. So we can be empowered as individuals, but we also are stronger if we work together. And there are ways to do this, and we encourage people to take up the fight.
Well, thanks so much for being here, Bruce.
Thank you. It's great, as always.
You are just listening to Bruce Herbert, Chief Executive of Newground Social Investment. For more information, check on the web at newground.net and also investorvoice.net. Again, that's newground.net and investorvoice.net. I'm Diane Horn. Thanks for listening. And be sure to tune in to the sustainability segment again next week on Listener Power at 90.3 FM and KEXP.org.